Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in 2 Samuel chapter 3. I'm going to do the first half of the chapter, verses 1 through 25. We'll call this section Abner Defects to David. Our context is this. In the last chapter, David has become king. He's been anointed king at Hebron, king of Judah, not king of Israel. And then after 2 years after that, he fought the Battle of Gibeon with Saul. Saul got beaten, and after he retreats to the north of Gibeon, he's on top of a hill. He finally talks Joab out of continuing the battle, Joab, David's general, and so then he retires back to Gibeah. David retires back to Hebron, or David's troops do anyway, and for 5 years, there's sporadic fighting between the two kingdoms, between Saul's house of Benjamin, whose titular head was Ish-bosheth, Saul's fourth son, and he had been moved from Gibeah, by the way. I'm sorry, he went from Gibeah to Mahanaim on the east side of the Jordan River, and Abner was Ish-bosheth's general, and David was down at Hebron in the south, halfway down the coast of the Dead Sea, halfway from the coast to Beersheba at Hebron, and he was ruling from there, the house of Judah, and his general was Joab. So now we go to 2 Samuel 3:1. Now there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. And David grew steadily stronger, but the house of Saul grew weaker continually. So this long war, this is in a 5-year period between when this war was begun to fought and the end of David's rule at Hebron, when David became king over the whole country, all of Israel, northern tribes as well as southern tribes. So that was 5 years. Ish-bosheth ruled for 2 years at the beginning of that 7-year period, 7.5-year period. 2 Samuel 2:10 says this, Saul's son Ish-bosheth was 40 years old when he began his reign over Israel. That was right after Saul had gotten killed. The house of Judah, however, followed David, and we assume that this is when it says he ruled for 2 years, he's ruling for 2 years and at the beginning of David's 7-year reign. Again, there's a lot of assumptions here. There's a lot of questions exactly what does that 2 years mean, but that's reasonable enough. So we've got a long war consisting of probably skirmishes rather than any pitched battle between Saul and the house of David, and David still bides his time. He's waiting as the house of Saul grows weaker and weaker and weaker. Why should he not wait? He's making progress. He's not going to risk it all in one big pitched battle. We go now to 2 Samuel chapter 3, verses 2 through 5. Sons were born to David at Hebron. His firstborn was Amnon by Ahinoam the Jezreelitess, and his second, Kileab, by Abigail, the widow of Nabal the Carmelite, and the third, Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur, and the fourth, Adonijah, the son of Haggith, and the fifth, Shephatiah, the son of Abital, and the sixth, Ithream, by David's wife, Eglah. These were born to David at Hebron. Now, David was married before he came to Hebron, but he didn't have any kids, apparently. He didn't start having kids till he settled down in Hebron. He, of course, was first married while he was at Gibeah working with Saul before the Civil War, and Saul had given him Michal and then taken Michal away from him. And then, when he was down fighting in the wilderness to the south, he married Ahinoam of Jezreel. This is not the northern Jezreel, the Jezreel Valley, another Jezreel down there near Carmel and Maon, which is 4 or 5 miles southwest of Hebron. So he marries Ahinoam, and then, of course, Abigail was from Maon, which is right south of Carmel. It's so close to Carmel, you can't tell the difference between the two, really. Nabal was the fool, Abigail's husband that David was about to kill. He was from Carmel. Carmel is on the road that goes straight west from En Gedi on the coast of the Dead Sea. So all these places should be familiar with us by now as we've gone through all of David's travails and travels as he's running from Saul. So he picked up 2 wives down there in the south. Now he also got a third son named Absalom, famous Absalom, who was the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. So Geshur, there's a dispute over where that was. I'm assuming it's in the Golan Heights going towards Syria, toward Aram, on the east of the Sea of Galilee, way up there in the north. That king, the king of that place was called Talmai. He had a daughter named Maacah. Maacah marries David, and that's where Absalom came from now. Let's look at some of these sons. The firstborn, Amnon by Ahinoam, the firstborn son, well, he was a peach of a guy. 2 Samuel 13:1. Now it was after this that Absalom, the son of David, had a beautiful sister whose name was Tamar. And Amnon, the son of David, loved her. And folks, that's not loved her in the sisterly sense. Incest. Rape. So much for Amnon. Now, Kileab, we don't know anything about. He was born by Abigail, the favored wife of David, a wonderful woman she was. Kileab, her son, is also named Daniel in 1 Chronicles 3:1, which says, now these were the sons of David who were born to him in Hebron. The firstborn was Ammon by Ahinoam the Jezreelitess. The second was Daniel by Abigail the Carmelitess. So it's a perfect parallel with here where the second was Kileab. So Kileab, also known as Daniel. We don't know too much about him that I know of. Now, Absalom, of course, is famous because he's the son of Maacah being the daughter of the king of Geshur, Talmai. Absalom is famous because he started a civil war, ended up getting killed in it when he got his hair caught in a tree. We'll talk all about that later on. Now, I assume that Geshur was in the Golan Heights, east of the Sea of Galilee, as you go towards Syria. But some people say it might have been south of Judah. And that's because in 1 Samuel 27:8, and I mentioned this when I was doing my podcast on that particular chapter, David and his men went up and raided the Geshurites, as well as the Gerzites. Those are from Gezer, which is in the area right near Beth Horon, north of Beth Horon, and the Amalekites, who were down in the south in the Negev. And so since you're going from Beth Horon down to this southern Negev, why would David be raiding the Geshurites way up there in the northeast? Well, I believe he did. If you say that Geshur is in the south, you have a problem, because if this Maacah, who was the mother of Absalom, if she was in the south, David killed all the women in the cities he attacked in the south. 1 Samuel 27:9, David attacked the land and did not leave a man or a woman alive. Well, if he did that, then Maacah would be dead. But Maacah was still alive, so I'm going to assume that she is. And not only that, Geshur is a well-known place in the Golan Heights, east of the Sea of Galilee. It's on all the maps. So this is where Absalom's mother came from. She was far south down in Hebron, but that's not hard to believe. Now, Adonijah, the son of Haggith. Haggith is a wife. I don't know anything about her, but Adonijah is famous because Adonijah usurped the throne in advance of Solomon. 1 Kings 1:5. Now, Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, I will be king. So he prepared for himself chariots and horsemen with 50 men to run before him. So we're getting a sneak preview of all the exciting events of David's reign when he becomes king. And believe me, it's not a peaceful reign. Well, I mean, maybe. Let's put it this way. There was a lot of excitement in his reign. Let me back up and talk about Maacah, the mother of Absalom. Jameson Fawcett Brown says that probably that was a political marriage to strengthen himself against Ishbosheth. Ishbosheth is at Mahanaim, right in the middle of the area between the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea on the eastern side of the Jordan River. That's where Mahanaim is. That's where Ishbosheth has been installed. And so David says, okay, I'll marry somebody up north of Ishbosheth in Geshur, so I'll marry Maacah. Well, Jameson Fawcett Brown says this political. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, who knows. But at any rate, the offspring, Absalom, was a disaster. Got two disasters here. Absalom, a disaster for David, and Adonijah, a disaster for Solomon. Well, for David, too, because he's trying to steal the kingdom from Solomon. Now, this last wife, the sixth one, is Eglah. Nothing is really known of her. She's not spoken of in any other place. Some people speculate that she's called a wife in order to distinguish Eglah from David's concubines. Maybe she's so not well known that she might have been thought to be a concubine, so wife is mentioned here. I don't know. David had sons from concubines also, as John Gill points out. That man must have been possessed of excess testosterone to have all those wives. And he might have had seven. Well, if you assume that Eglah is different than Michael, some people say they're the same, but if she's a different wife than Michael, and David's going to get Michael back later, as we'll see, that means David has seven wives in addition to his concubines. Good gravy. I remember Rasmus Rush Dooney, the Reconstructionist guy, the Dominionist guy, was talking about how, you know, young men might think having the right to polygamy was great. No, it wasn't. The man goes out to work in the field all day, comes back, and the first wife has him on Monday night. He satisfies her sexually. He goes out the next day, works all day in the field. Tuesday comes back. Ah, there's wife number two. She's competing with wife number one for the affections of her husband, so she fixes even a better meal than wife number one, Monday night wife. So the man goes into wife number two on Tuesday night, tries to please her sexually, comes back, and the same thing happens Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. By the time the Sabbath comes around, it's a good thing that it's a day of rest, because the poor old man is tuckered out. Got to go eat some mandrakes, the ancient equivalent of Viagra. Well, I don't know. David had all these concubines. You know, he's still got to go out and commit adultery with Bathsheba. Good gravy, this man must have been oversexed. But anyway, we see six sons here, and every one of them had a different mother. Lots of half-brothers. We go down to 2 Samuel chapter 3, verses 6 through 8. It came about, while there was war between the house of Saul and the house of David, that Abner was making himself strong in the house of Saul. Now Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah. And Ishbosheth said to Abner, "Why have you gone into my father's concubine?" Then Abner was very angry over the words of Ishbosheth and said, "Am I a dog's head that belongs to Judah? Today I show kindness to the house of Saul, your father, to his brothers and to his friends, and have not delivered you into the hands of David. And yet today you charge me with a guilt concerning this woman." Well, how was Abner becoming strong in the house of Saul? Well, it either could be he was improving his personal position, or it could be he was exerting himself strongly in the interest of the house of Saul. I don't think the latter is true. I think he's looking after his personal position. Now, Ishbosheth says, "Why have you gone into my father's concubine?" He might have not been telling the truth, but Ishbosheth seems like a weak character as we go through here. I don't think he would lie to Abner. Maybe he thought Abner had gone into Rizpah but hadn't done it. But I'm going to assume that Abner actually did go into Rizpah. Now, if he did, that would show that Abner indeed was improving his personal position, because when you go into a king's concubine, King Saul, he's dead though, but still the concubine passes down. You go into a king's concubine, you are really making a political statement. The more concubines you had, the more power you had, because a concubine was a symbol of power. So we're going to assume that Abner's looking after some personal ambition here, although it's not 100% proven. He's called on it by Ishbosheth. Before I go into Abner's anger, let's back up a minute and look at this thing. Look at this act of taking a king's concubine. Absalom did that with his father David later on. 2 Samuel 16, verses 21 through 22. Ahithophel said to Absalom, "Go into your father's concubines, your father David's concubines, whom he has left to keep the house. Then all Israel will hear that you have made yourself odious to your father. The hands of all who are with you will also be strengthened." It's political. So they pitched a tent for Absalom on the roof, and Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. So Absalom's making a statement. What a way to make a statement. Have a little bit of fun. Tell all of Israel, "Ha, ha, ha, my father's concubines are now mine." That's not my culture, but that's pretty disgusting, even though I'm looking at it as an outsider. So, naturally, Ishbosheth is upset because that concubine had now passed down to him by right of inheritance, and Abner had shacked up, or at least apparently shacked up, with Ishbosheth's concubine. So he's very angry. But now, not Ishbosheth was angry. Abner was angry at Ishbosheth for calling Abner on it. Now, Ishbosheth was a dumb bunny not to have anticipated this reaction. He should never have made the accusation at all, in my humble opinion, whether the accusation was true or not. He didn't have any political power. He didn't have any military power. Abner was really ruling the kingdom. He was just a nothing burger. But he nevertheless called Abner in on it, because that was a serious thing, shacking up with my concubine. Abner reacts, understandably and predictably. "I showed kindness to the house of Saul, your father." He sure has. He's fought for Ishbosheth, gotten men killed for Ishbosheth. Remember the Battle of Gibeon, which we looked at in the last chapter? Abner also points out, "Hey, anytime you want, I can deliver Israel into the house of David, and you couldn't stop me." As a matter of fact, that's what he's going to do in just a little while. And so Abner's ticked off. He got really ticked off. "You charged me with a guilt." Well, he was guilty. I mean, he probably did. Well, we don't know for sure, but it seems like he did sleep with Rizpah. We go now to 2 Samuel 3, verses 9 through 12. Abner's still talking to Ishbosheth. "May God punish Abner and do so severely if I don't do for David what the Lord swore to him, to transfer the kingdom from the house of Saul and to establish the throne of David over Israel and Judah from Dan to Beersheba." Ishbosheth could not answer Abner because he was afraid of him. Abner sent messengers as his representatives to say to David, "Whose land is it? Make your covenant with me, and you can be certain that I am your side to hand all Israel over to you." Ooh, the Benedict Arnold of Israel, Abner. And of course, verse 9 is an oath. "May God punish Abner and do so severely." In other words, if I don't do what I'm about to say, may God punish me. That's a serious oath. He's mad. He's angry. And then he mentions an oath that the Lord has made to David to transfer the kingdom from Saul and establish the throne from Dan to Beersheba. That means all the way from the north to the south. Of course, that's the common way of referring to all of Israel. Dan is the tribe in the north. Beersheba is far in the south in the Negev desert. Now, Abner is quoting or talking about the famous promise that God had made to David to take over Israel. This was through Samuel, of course, the prophet, 1 Samuel 15, verse 28. So Samuel said to Saul, "The Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today and has given it to your neighbor, who is better than you." And of course, Saul's neighbor would be David to the south in Judah. So everybody knew about this promise that David was going to be king, and yet Ishbosheth had spent 7 years upholding the throne of Saul, despite the fact that God had prophesied through Samuel that the throne was going to be taken away from the house of Saul. He was deliberately acting against a divine prophecy. He changed his mind finally to go along with that divine prophecy and give the kingdom to David, but he changed his mind not because of the fear of God, but rather because he was angry at Ishbosheth, so he's not such a hot guy. John Gill says he, Abner, knew he would not prosper and that he was fighting against God, which shows what a hardened, wicked creature he was, and how far ambition and being thought to be of consequence will carry a man. That's just like the devil. The devil knows he's going to get thrown in the lake of fire, but he keeps right on fighting, knowing that he's doomed. Abner kept right on fighting, knowing that he was doomed. So Abner sends messengers as his representatives to David. Notice it's his representatives. KJV and the NIV says on his behalf, his personal behalf, not for Ishbosheth, before himself, because he's acting as a traitor here. He's betraying his kingdom. He goes to David and says, "Whose land is this?" Or his messengers say to David, "Whose land is it?" God's Word translation says, "Who owns this country?" Now, what does that mean? Ellicott has two possibilities. Saul could be saying through his messenger, Abner could be saying through his messengers, "Hey, David, is not the land yours by promise? It has been promised by Samuel. Whose land is this? Well, it's obviously yours land, so why am I fighting you?" Abner could also have been saying, "Who has the power to bring the land into subjection? To whom he will, except myself. Whose land is this? It's my land. I run it, I control it, and I'm going to deliver it to you." So it's either Abner is saying to David, "Hey, whose land is this? It's your land, David." Or he's saying, "Whose land is this? It's my land, in order to give it over to you, David." So either way, same idea comes across, is I'm ready to hand the land over to you, David. We go now to 2 Samuel chapter 3, verses 13 through 14. David replied, "Good, I will make a covenant with you. However, there's one thing I require of you. Do not appear before me unless you bring Saul's daughter Michal here when you come to see me." Then David sent messengers to say to Ishbosheth, son of Saul, "Give me back my wife, Michal. I was engaged to her for the price of 100 Philistine foreskins." So David wants to make a covenant with Abner to steal the kingdom from Ishbosheth. Some people have raised the question, can David be charged with underhanded treachery for this, for trying to steal the kingdom from Ishbosheth? Please. Why is David not a traitor for doing this? God had promised him the kingdom, for one thing, through Samuel. His demand for the return of Michal was perfectly legitimate. Michal was his first wife. That was a legitimate wife that Saul stole from him. Her second wife was really living in adultery with her. But the third reason why he didn't commit treachery, he's at war with Ishbosheth. He's been fighting him for 7 years. There's nothing immoral about trying to win a war by finding traitors. I mean, if you're on the betrayed side, you don't like it. Like, we don't like Benedict Arnold. But from Britain's point of view, was that immoral for Britain to try to get information from a spy, Benedict Arnold? I don't think so. It's nothing immoral. It's war. Now, why does David insist on Michal coming along with this covenant, coming along with Abner as Abner makes a covenant with David? He's had six wives since. What does he need his first one back for? And she'd also lived with another man, so you would think, maybe I don't want her back. Who was this other man? We read in 1 Samuel 25, verse 44. Now Saul had given Michal, his daughter, David's wife, to Palti, the son of Laish, who was from Galim. So Palti is also named Paltiel. That's who Michael's living with. Well, it could be the reason that David wanted her is because he had great affection for her. Even though he had six wives since Michal, and even though Michal was living with another man. That's one reason. It was love. Or it could be that Michal was more legitimate than the other six wives, and he felt like, she's my wife, by golly. The more wives I have, the more power I have, and I have a right to her. I have a right to demand her back whenever I want to. Well, that leads to the third option, not is he just not only trying to establish a legal, legitimate marriage, but also a politically prudent marriage. It was politically prudent to get Michael back. Michael's husband, Paltiel, he could have made pretensions to the throne. I'm married to the daughter of the king. James and Foster and Brown agree that this was a political move by David. Quote, David's insisting on it at that particular moment as an indispensable condition of his entering into any treaty with Abner seems to have proceeded not so much from a lingering attachment as from an expectation that his possession of her would incline some adherents of the house of Saul to be favorable to his cause. Well, romance dies, does it not? In the ancient world, we don't know why he took Michael back, but it was good politically to get her back. And so David sent messages not back to Abner, but to Ishbosheth. And he says, give me back my wife, Michael. I was engaged to her for the price of 100 Philistine foreskins. Why would David mention the 100 foreskins that he had to get? He had to kill 100 people to get their foreskins in order to give to Saul. Saul was trying to get David killed by making him fight the Philistines in order to get his wife. So David risked his life 100 times to get Michael, and then she gets taken away from him. So he's upset about that. We read about that in 1 Samuel 18:25. Then Saul replied, say this to David, the king desires no other bride price except 100 Philistine foreskins to take revenge on his enemies. Actually, Saul intended to cause David's death at the hands of the Philistines. Why did David mention that detail of the 100 foreskins? As John Gill says, David wanted to emphasize to Ishbosheth that David had risked his life to gain Michael and he wants her back. Her theft from him was even more egregiously wrong than if it had been an ordinary marriage. He'd risk his life to get her, and it really makes it wrong for Saul to have stolen her from me, and you're Saul's son, give her back. We go now to 2 Samuel chapter 3, verses 15 through 16. Oh, well, first of all, before we do that, we need to discuss the order of messenger sending here. First of all, Abner sent messages to David. I'll make a covenant with you. I'll betray Israel to you. Those messengers, after talking to David, came back from Hebron back to Abner at Mahanaim and said, he's willing, but he's got an extra condition. He wants Michael to be brought back. So then Abner probably sent his messengers back to David and said, yes, you can have Michael, but why don't you send your messengers directly to Ishbosheth to ask for Michael? The reason being that would make me look less like a traitor if you're asking for your wife back directly from the king instead of through me. I think this is Adam Clark's idea. Well, actually, that's John Gill's idea, and I think that makes a lot of sense. We go now to 2 Samuel chapter 3, verses 15 through 16. Ishbosheth sent and took her from her husband, took Abigail from her husband, from Paltiel, the son of Laish. But her husband went with her, weeping as he went, and followed her as far as Bahurim. Then Abner said to him, go, return. So he returned. Now the general tells you to return, nothing you can do. You have to return. Now Paltiel is just another name for Palti. Paltiel was named in 1 Samuel 25:44. Now Saul had given Michal, his daughter, David's wife, to Paltiel, the son of Laish. He's also known in another place as Faulty, or maybe in another translation. So Paltiel lost his wife. He goes to Bahurim, crying as he went, following Michal. Now Bahurim means young men. It's a place east of Jerusalem on the road to the Jordan Valley. Kind of famous a little bit because Shimei, the man who threw dust and stones at David as he was fleeing the city because of Absalom's revolt, he lived there. So we're going to see Shimei again. One of David's heroes, Osmaveth, that might be in Chronicles. We're not going to do Chronicles, but one of David's heroes, Osmaveth, also lived in Bahurim. But basically, Bahurim is where Shimei lived. That's the way to remember it. So all the way to Bahurim, east of Jerusalem, he's crying, Paltiel is. Should we feel sorry for Paltiel for crying for losing his wife? I don't think so. He took Michal for a wife while she was still married to David. He could have refused to do that. He could have said, Saul, no, I don't want to take your daughter to be my wife. She's married to somebody else. But what he thought instead was, ooh, I'm going to marry the daughter of a king. Maybe there's some advancement in that for me. I don't feel sorry for him. Now, Abner, verse 16, tells Paltiel, go return back to your home. Wherever that was, probably Gibeah, go back, and it seems that here Abner is going to accompany Michal all the way to go to David, back down at Hebron where they're going to make that covenant. So we go now to 2 Samuel chapter 3, verses 17 through 18. Now Abner had consultation with the elders of Israel, saying, in times past you were seeking for David to be king over you, Now then, do it. For the Lord has spoken of David, saying, By the hand of my servant David I will save my people Israel from the hand of the Philistines and from the hand of all your enemies. So now Abner's treachery is in full display. He's got all the elders of Israel, that's the northern 11 tribes. And he says, In times past you were seeking for David to be king. And what is he referring to there? Apparently the people upon Saul's death at the Battle of Gilboa, they were ready to go over to David instead of staying on to Ishbosheth, but Abner forestalled that movement by installing Ishbosheth as the king of Israel. Well, Abner is basically saying, well, you tried 7 years ago to do it. Well, let's do it now. Why? Because in verse 18, Abner says, For the Lord has spoken of David, saying, By the hand of my servant David, I will save my people Israel. Now, this quotation of the Lord speaking about David, this quotation by Abner of this is nowhere recorded in so many words, but was probably the sense of the promise making him king when Samuel made David king. As a matter of fact, Samuel might have actually spoken those words and it might not have been recorded, might have been passed down by word of mouth. But basically the idea is Abner is saying, look, the Lord has said, by my servant David, I will save my people Israel, because the Lord has said that my servant David will be king, and being king means to save my people Israel from the hand of the Philistines. So it's a loose quote. Could be a loose quote of Samuel, or it could be another direct quote that was not recorded. So Abner is now appealing to the prophet Samuel after fighting what Samuel has said for 7 years. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that David's election by God to be king to save Israel, that was not Abner's real reason. He was a hypocrite. His real reason was he was angry at Ishbosheth for complaining about Abner's alleged or actual sexual encounter with Rizpah, the concubine, Saul's concubine. Now, his ostensible motive was to fulfill God's prophecy about David through Samuel and to end the civil war. That was what he put a public face on. That's how he put his public face on. But he was a hypocrite. He was just mad at Ishbosheth. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say, quote, the guilt and infamy of his transaction were exclusively his. We go now to 2 Samuel 3, verses 19 through 21. Abner also spoke in the hearing of Benjamin. And in addition, Abner went to speak in the hearing of David in Hebron. Well, Abner's already consulted with the elders of Israel in verse 17. Now, at the hearing of Benjamin, I guess he's speaking exclusively now to the elders of Benjamin, because they're the big shots in this kingdom, because Saul was of the tribe of Benjamin, so was Ishbosheth. And in addition, verse 19, Abner went to speak in the hearing of David in Hebron, all that seemed good to Israel and to the whole house of Benjamin. So Abner, instead of being a general, he's now a diplomat. He's talked to all of the northern tribes, particularly to the northern tribe of Benjamin. And then he went down to Hebron to speak to David, and he's working out all the details. Now, the hardest people to convince would probably be Benjamin, because that's where Ishbosheth's from. He'd have to give up his kingdom. And that tribe would have the most prestige to lose by allying with David. They've been fighting him for 7 years. Hard to admit to defeat after fighting David. Well, actually, for 5 years after Ishbosheth. Let's just say 7 years. 7.5 years they've been fighting each other. And now they're going to have to give in. So Abner had some convincing to do. And it was necessary to convince Benjamin, because Benjamin's the closest tribe to Judah. David's ruling Judah from Hebron. Benjamin would have given a lot of trouble if they had not gone along with this and had been pacified. In other words, Benjamin is a deal breaker. If they don't get Benjamin to agree, if Abner and David don't get Benjamin to agree, having all the northern tribes to agree to peace with David wouldn't have meant anything. So they had to get Benjamin. So in verse 20, Abner and 20 men with him came to David at Hebron. These are probably the leaders of Israel, not just Benjamin, but all of them. Abner now is probably feeling comfortable enough to go to David publicly. He's made it public now, his treachery. John Gill speculates that when Abner brought Michal to David, he had apparently gone privately. I don't think so. Well, he could have. Maybe so. David makes a feast for Abner and his 20 men. It's probably a covenant feast, because feasts were usually held in conjunction with covenants, and they're about to make a covenant. Verse 21, Abner says to David, Let me go and gather all Israel to my lord the king. My lord the king. Whoa, Abner's calling David my lord the king. He'd been fighting him for 7 years. Abner's already assuming the covenant is as good as done after all his politicking and diplomatic endeavor. So Abner says, I'm going to get all of Israel down here to make a covenant with you, all the leaders of Israel, so you can be king. David sends Abner away and in peace. So peace, wonderful. Abner must have felt good about this transfer of power to David. There were no insults directed against him by David's men. There were no attempts against his person to hurt him or to kill him or to imprison him. There were no accusations of treachery. Everything is just copacetic. We go now to verses 22 through 25 of 2 Samuel 3. And behold, the servants of David and Joab came from a raid and brought much spoil with them. But Abner was not with David in Hebron, for he had sent him away, and he had gone in peace. When Joab and all the army that was with him arrived, they told Joab, saying, Abner the son of Ner came to the king, and he has sent him away, and he has gone in peace. Then Joab came to the king and said, What have you done? Behold, Abner came to you. Why then have you sent him away, and he is already gone? You know Abner the son of Ner, that he came to deceive you, and to learn of your going out and coming in, and to find out all that you are doing. So Joab wasn't there at the feast between David and Abner. He was out fighting a war, probably with some Philistines, a raid, actually, not a war, a raid with some Philistines, maybe Edomites, Amalekites, whoever. John Gill says that he was fighting a troop of robbers that made an incursion into the land, taking the advantage of a civil war between Israel and Judah, such as the Edomites, Amalekites, and especially the Philistines. That makes sense. He arrives. He's not happy when he finds out about this impending covenant between Israel and David. And he basically accuses Abner of coming in as a spy. And that kind of thing was done all the time. You read enough ancient history, oh man. Kings would come in, they'd have a feast, and next thing you know, they're lying dead over their food because they were assassinated. Also in Greek history, happened all the time. He said in verse 44, Joab did to David, What have you done? That's pretty insolent for a general to speak to his king that way, but I'm sure he was very upset. Now let's look at Joab's motives in denouncing Abner. Got three options here. Option number one, Joab genuinely believed Joab was using a ruse to destroy David. And that sounds pretty reasonable to me. They've been fighting forever. Option number two, Joab was afraid that Abner would rival him as a military leader in the kingdom. In other words, Joab might not have thought it was a trick, but he thought that Abner was trying to get the two kingdoms together so Abner could be the number one military leader, and Joab would be, of course, shut to the side. Well, why would Abner be ahead of Joab? Well, or might be ahead of Joab. Jemison Fawcett Brown said, well, there's several reasons. One is Abner had a lot of military talents. He had won a lot of battles. He was very popular with his army. He was very influential throughout the nation, as we just saw that politicking he did. And David would be greatly in Abner's debt for having brought all the northern tribes over into the kingdom. So Abner would be a big shot in this new kingdom, and Joab might have been a little shot. So that's the second reason Joab wasn't happy with David for making this deal with Abner. The third reason was, or could be, the third option is that Joab was full of revenge because Abner had killed Joab's brother Asahel. Now, we talked about that in the last chapter, 2 Samuel chapter 2, verse 23. This is when, after the Battle of Gibeon, Abner had gotten defeated by Joab. David wasn't there, but Joab was there. Defeated Abner and was... Abner's troops were retreating through the wilderness, getting ready to rally on a certain hilltop there north of Gibeon. And Asahel, who was Joab's younger brother, he was very fast and he was young, and he was stupid, young and dumb. He chased Abner, and Abner didn't want to kill him. He didn't want trouble with Joab. Abner probably thought that one day he's going to have to deal with Joab, which was true. And he didn't want to kill Asahel, so he kept saying, Asahel, why don't you turn to the left or to the right, find another soldier, kill him, take his armor, get your trophy. Get your spoil, but don't kill me, because you're not going to kill me. I'm going to kill you. Asahel, he wanted some glory. He kept going. And apparently what happened is they were sitting there negotiating and talking. Abner realized that Asahel's not going to stop till Asahel tries to kill Abner. So Abner just rammed the butt end of his sword right into Asahel's gut. The butt end of the sword came out of Asahel's back, and Asahel died on the spot. Now, Joab's not going to be happy about that. That's his younger brother that got killed, and Abner did it. Now, it wasn't really Abner's fault. It was Asahel's fault. But, you know, Joab's not going to think that way. So, Joab's got three good reasons for denouncing Abner coming into the camp. That's always the problem with civil war. Who's going to be loyal to whom? Ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished the first half of chapter 3, verses 1 through 25. Now, we're ready to, in our next audio, to handle the last part of the chapter, verses 26 through 39, we will see Joab will murder Abner. And so the tragedy continues. I hope you stay tuned for that exciting story, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.